In this episode, we speak with Dilip Thasmon, the founder and CEO of Jeeves, an all-in-one corporate spend and expense management platform for businesses in global markets. The platform allows clients to open multi-currency accounts, issue corporate cards, send cross-border payments, and manage expenses. More than 3,000 companies across the world trust Jeeves with their financial payment stack. Jeeves has raised $380 million from Andreessen Horowitz, CRV, GIC, and other notable investors. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Dilip, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it and looking forward to this.
As I was preparing for this conversation, I noticed you've actually accelerated through the whole work and career process up through entrepreneurship. So excited to kind of go through the journey with you of how it all happened. I noticed you actually started off as a consultant with Deloitte. This isn't the first time that I've actually seen that, where you start off being a consultant and then dramatically accelerate into entrepreneurship. Can you tell us about those early days and maybe how you got clued into transitioning?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, you're right. My first and last job that I interviewed for was at Deloitte as a consultant in their M&A practice. And honestly, I thought it was a fantastic kind of starting point because you learn just how to think very quickly. You also learn how to deal with a lot of different kind of moving parts. I just knew for me long-term, that wasn't really what I was looking to do. But you know, even today when I talk to kind of new graduates, I kind of encourage them to think about the beginning of their career as, you know, how do you accelerate your learning? Because the one thing you have at that point is time and, you know, your resources, money, lifespan, they change as you get older. But when you start, you really have time and you should be accelerating for like, how do I pack in the most possible in the next 3-4 years that I can learn? Because it gives you the best kind of starting point for anything you want to do after that. So for me, that was a big part of kind of why I decided to join Deloitte. I just liked the exposure that I was getting. It was exposing me to really smart people that were thinking in a different level than I was at that point. And it forces you to kind of either keep up or step off, right? And so that I thought was a great starting point. I always knew I wanted to start something, candidly. So it wasn't like it was like this big epiphany. I just felt like there's just so many opportunities out there. And I thought a lot of kind of my skill sets, I also have, you know, 2 engineering degrees and then went to Stanford for an MBA, kind of positions me well to be able to take advantage of that. So I didn't know what I was going to start. And even kind of moving into Jeeves and FinTech was a little bit different than my last company, which was in the marketing automation space. But I always knew that that was something that was very kind of interesting and appealing to me because you get to create a lot of value. And I like the process of creation. And so those two things were kind of how I was looking at it. It wasn't like this big plan of like consulting plus this. It was just consulting's a good starting point. All right, now I'm ready. Like, what are good opportunities that I find intrinsically appealing to me?
Well, if you think about strategic moves, career moves, your next one was, I think, key is that you went to PayPal. So tell us about how that all happened and then what you kind of learned from the PayPal experience.
So one, it's again, just getting exposure to a different way of thinking and just the scale of what the thinking was on. I worked for a little bit at PayPal. It wasn't super long, but it was on the NFC product, which was on the payment side. And I remember back then, NFC was kind of like this new technology, not to be confused with NFT. NFC was like a payment QR code. And it was like this new technology that was supposed to take over everywhere. And it just never really took off in the US. In Asia and other countries, it has. And that's also something that I kind of took away, which is a lot of times you might think you have the best product, but there's things you don't control that kind of also affect, you know, PMF and product market fit. And you have to be nimble enough to be able to adjust that. And then the flip side is when you do see a window and an opportunity, you have to move just so, so fast because you might not get that same window again.
Did you encounter like a network of people there that really got you thinking in a different way and almost like propelled you into the fintech world?
Yeah. So, you know, this was overlapping with my time at Stanford in the business school. And so that I think also exposed me just joking, you know, really smart people, a lot of different areas of life. And I actually like that. I like the way of thinking that isn't linear, because you see different things in different areas, and then you find a way to incorporate that back into what you're doing. And even if you look at what we're doing right now with Jeeves, we took a very different approach to how to build this than if I was in fintech for 30 years, right? And so that looking at it from a different perspective has both positives and negatives. But I think when you're exposed to just thinking in a different fashion, because you might be talking to someone that comes from politics or comes from nonprofits and they look at things differently, that helps a lot when you can bring that over to your own kind of area of expertise. So it was more kind of, I wouldn't say specifically to PayPal, it was just more kind of overlapping with kind of the time that I was at Stanford and kind of right after that when I started Power Inbox, which was kind of the company before Jeeves.
Yeah. So tell us about Power Inbox, and you achieved like fantastic growth rates there and huge user base. So how did that all happen and unfold?
So this was around 2013 or so, seems so long ago. And I was graduating Stanford and kind of was right after the PayPal. And it was something that I'd worked with my brother. And so we saw this kind of opportunity in email, and we wanted to build kind of a new email system. And, you know, it took off. We had a lot of usage. And about 2 years into it, it was sort of plateauing, right? And so that was kind of one of the first lessons that we had to do, like a hard pivot. And we had to like let go of folks, which was never, ever fun. And that was one of the early lessons of, you know, if you see it, just be truthful to yourself. Don't try to sugarcoat it, because you're the one that sees it first. And the longer you kind of delay, the worse the outcome is going to be. And so what we pivoted to is something that focused more on kind of marketing automation. So really focused on the email space, focused on the ad serving infrastructure side. So something similar to like Google on the web, but inside email. And that started to really kind of take off. And so that was something that I worked on for about 7-8 years until, you know, I started Jeeves. And it was a completely different space than Jeeves, because Jeeves is obviously on the banking infrastructure fintech side. And that was more on the marketing automation side. And what it did give me was the ability to, again, like think very quickly, bring in a framework for building something, even if it isn't with the same area of expertise as, you know, financial services, if that kind of made sense.
Mm-hmm. And so when you were experiencing the plateau, obviously it wasn't an option to just like deal with the plateau or ride it down. But I guess if you didn't have capital backing you and an expected like big outcome, could you have continued with that original product?
Yeah, it's a good question. So our last company before Jeeves, we actually didn't raise that much capital. It was a very different cycle. It was a different type of product. I think we only raised about $20 million across the lifetime of the product. So that's about 8-9 years. So it isn't that much capital. But any capital you have, you know, you kind of look at it from the perspective of what is that going to generate in terms of kind of an outcome here. I think what was really happening there is you kind of have to read the market. So putting it another way, we could have probably slogged along on that version of the product for another 3-4 years. But what would it have gotten us, right? At some point, you have to be like very crystal clear of what the market is telling you, right? And if you have power users, you have new users that are like, yeah, this is cool, but it's not like that cool. Like, it's not good enough for me to like switch. You know, it is what it is. You hear it once, you hear it 10 times, you hear it 15 times, then you kind of have to like respond to that, right? So I don't really know if it would have changed as much of the outcome there, because the market was kind of clear in terms of that first version of the product and just the response that we were getting back. And at that point, you know, if you don't listen to that, that's more on you than your funding or your team, et cetera.
Right. And then where did the insight come from for Jeeves? You know, how did that come about?
So actually, at my last company, we had offices in 2 countries. And even there, it would take 30 to 45 days to close your books, because you would have 2 different bank accounts, 2 different corporate cards, 2 different currencies completely, right? And so that was the central kind of thesis of Jeeves, which is companies are going global increasingly quickly from day one, whether it's 1 employee, 1 vendor, et cetera. And banking is still country and currency specific. So if you want to really build something that works naturally across multiple countries, you kind of have to go as close to that infrastructure layer as possible. So it was something that I had seen firsthand. And again, a lot of times people think a lot of what we're doing is just tied to credit or something else, but really the core problem we're trying to solve is how do you build a global business bank from day one? And it just has different layers to it. You got to start with credit, then you add some form of customer deposit, then you add payments. But the end goal is the same, which is how do you build a global business bank that can function across multiple countries and multiple currencies? And for me, it was a learned kind of problem. It's something I had seen firsthand in my prior company.
So is the initial pain point that you approach the market with the credit, or is it more expense management? What, you know, which product is it?
So the product, and this is a key component of the product today, was a corporate credit card, right? And so you get corporate credit for about 30 days, and then you get the software that ties back into it. And what we were seeing, especially in Latin America, which is still, you know, our largest market, Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, is that it was hitting a real kind of inflection point where people were just really, really hurting for more credit, mm-hmm. meaning their businesses were growing, they had good kind of economics, and they needed access to credit to kind of supercharge what they were doing. And so it was a combination of both the expense management and the credit component. And today our product still has both, depending on which market we're in. But we were starting to see a real inflection point on the credit component. And we only do businesses, by the way. We don't do consumer credit. It's just a very different market, cycle, underwriting, et cetera. But that's kind of how we had seen it right at the beginning when we launched in Mexico in, I think, April of 2021.
And how do you go to market and reach a lot of people all at once and convince them that, hey, you should try using us, you know?
Yeah, so I think you kind of break it down into smaller pieces, right? And so one of the things that my kind of central thesis with this product is the more countries we cover, the more valuable it is for any one user in one country, because you just have more coverage, more currencies, et cetera. So today, we cover 22 countries, and they're broken out into four regions. So region one is Spanish-speaking LATAM, which is Mexico and Colombia. Region two is US, Canada. Region three is UK, Europe. And region four is Brazil. And the way we kind of go to market is we do a lot of the building centrally. So product engineering, finance, et cetera. And then we have a GM model where the GM owns the region, is responsible for all the customer facing functions. So that includes sales, customer service, et cetera, et cetera. So again, it seems a lot more daunting now, and candidly, it is daunting doing it across 22 countries. But I think when you start, you just start with one. And so we started with Mexico. You know, we hired our first kind of employee there, who's our GM still today on the ground. And then you build around them and you give them the same opportunity that you were trying to do, which is to build something really big. And one of the key things I've seen is, you know, smart people like to work on hard problems, because that's where they get kind of their intrinsic motivation more than kind of the extrinsic, which if you're smart, you can probably get in a lot of different places. So you kind of take it from just step one, step two, which is find a good person, find someone you believe in, find someone that wants to build just like you do, and then kind of build around them. And what's happened is we've actually now developed sort of a playbook for launching in markets, which has become kind of a company strength as well, which is we know how to quickly launch in markets. We know how to support that very quickly. We know how to get kind of the infrastructure we need, because we've done it multiple times, and there's no real substitute unless you actually go into it.
And did Mexico quickly pan out the way you anticipated?
Yeah, it did. I mean, Mexico, I think today is still probably our largest single market, like single country. So we definitely saw a lot of quick kind of product market fit that we had to kind of adjust to. But yeah, it was something that was obviously kind of hitting a sweet spot in the market and kind of our offering that we had at that point. And again, you have to keep in mind the comparison point for a lot of people is going to a traditional bank, which takes, you know, a long time to use, to access, to get anything, right? And there's a reason those banks are like that, and they're very profitable. So again, I don't see our role as competing against them. I think the market is large enough that there's probably a subset that even the banks are like, that's too complicated. I don't want to go deal with, you know, companies in two countries, et cetera. And for us, that's our sweet spot. And I see it as more, you know, a spectrum, and they play in a very, very large part of the spectrum. And then there's a smaller part where companies like Jeeves can operate. And even that is just a very, very massive kind of opportunity.
And how about loss ratios? As you were extending the credit and you were building up a portfolio, a lot of different types of businesses coming into the mix, did it kind of all shake out well?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And really a big part of 2023, which was last year, was just getting unit economics very, very tight. Like you have to kind of remember in 2021 and 2022, we were in a zero interest environment, right? And so you just have a lot more leeway when your borrowing rate is at 0%, which we adjusted to, I think, very quickly. One was you would find customers that are good customers that also had a version of what the market was showing, which is they had the ability to pay, but it's very hard to underwrite the willingness to pay, which is in 5 months, 6 months, how does the willingness change, right? And that was one like key thing that we were seeing very, very quickly. And then the second one was you started kind of leading into a little bit of a negative selection bias where, you know, in LATAM, you can still lend at 30%, 40%, and that's comparatively cheap compared to a bank. But a company that is taking cash at, you know, 50% on a card doesn't necessarily look like the core customer we're looking for. And so early last year, we just made a big decision to kind of beef up our contribution profit. And this included like hiring, you know, folks from Capital One. We hired a compliance officer from Marqeta and just like beefed up our offering there. And then also focused on just very laser-like, who do we consider good customers? So you don't have as much of the luxury of like, let's give this to everybody. And so even in terms of who we approve, it's probably one third of the number of companies that we used to approve in January of last year. So again, just a lot more stringency, a lot more focus on collections, a lot more focus on, is this a good long-term unit economics positive customer? And it has been a pretty successful year from that perspective. And we feel pretty good going into 2024 on the unit economics and contribution margin side. And again, this was not something that was easy to do because we had to do this in literally 12 to 14 months. And usually you just get a longer time horizon because the rates are not going up that quickly, but it was the right decision to do. So we feel pretty good about where we are going into this year. But yeah, I think 2023, like for most companies, especially if you touch finance, was a year that you either adjusted or didn't make it through the year.
And how much risk to this business model is related to exchange rates? So you have like interest rates and then you have exchange rates.
Yeah. So it's a good question. Interest rates impact a little bit more than the exchange rate, because it's not like we're, you know, moving cash every single day to kind of fund the card or fund the program, right? We have actual offices on the ground in Mexico, in Colombia, in Sao Paulo, in Toronto, in London, full entities on the ground. So we do have a full kind of treasury and finance function that looks at how much cash do we keep there so that we minimize that back and forth. So It's less as much on the FX because you're not like just every day, you know, moving money back and forth just to use the card. But the interest rate does have an impact, just like, you know, I think you're seeing businesses completely different spaces like real estate, et cetera, that just the cost of borrowing is a lot higher. So we look at both. We have to look at both. Again, if you look at it from a unit economics perspective, both FX and obviously interest rate kind of affect that. But I would say interest rate right now has a much larger impact because FX is more on the edges and like the middle doesn't fluctuate as much.
And so is Jeeves scaling as quickly at this moment or point in its life cycle? Is it scaling as quickly as previous company had scaled?
I mean, compared to my previous company, I think this is scaling faster. I think it was just different spaces, right? And one of the things that, you know, I liked about Jeeves is you had a chance to make a real impact and make that impact across, you know, 22 countries. Like you are providing funding in some sense, credit in some sense, financial infrastructure in some sense to these companies that are then using that to grow their business, right? So it's almost like an exponential effect that you can have by providing this product in market, which is very different from kind of the last company that I had started. So yeah, I would say, you know, it's not apples to apples. So I don't know if I'd go like direct head to head, but it is growing quickly and it's growing, you know, this year, the difference is it has to grow profitably or grow responsibly, right? It can't just be growth at all costs, which is kind of what the market was leading towards in 2021.
And when you're making important strategic decisions, you know, it's always difficult to get to 100% of the amount of information to base that decision off of. How much do you employ your gut feel when you're making decisions?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. So one of our core values is kind of to be, you know, relentless. And, you know, relentless, people kind of think of it in different ways. But the way I think of it is you get as much information as possible. And then what I like to do is think about, is there another data point that would make a difference in this outcome? And then is there a time horizon where I'm going to get that data point? If the answer is, you know, yes and no, or no and no, then you have the information you're going to have to make this decision. Now you make your decision. If the answer is yes and yes, then it's like, okay, I can probably wait, you know, 1 week, 2 weeks, let's punt on this for now. But a lot of times people don't want to make the decision just because the decision itself is hard. But the hardness of the decision doesn't really change. Now you can be more comfortable because you have more information, but that information might also not come. And I think the really good leaders are able to balance both of those, right? And I think about a lot of things in terms of like probability. I used to play a lot of poker, but it's a very good framework on how to think, which is like, you know, like what's the probability? Like, are you going to get 100%? No. Are you 50 and you get this, you're going to be 55? Great. Like it doesn't really change your information. If you go from 50 to 80, okay, that's valuable. But like, how long is that going to take? Because your time also has value, right? And a lot of times people forget about the time part and only look at the information part. And yes, like in an absolute sense, more information is better, but you're also trading off time to get that information. So that's how I kind of like adjust the two, which is, yes, information is good, more information is even better, but what's the time horizon to get that? Because that time also has value, especially if you're a young company, a startup.
Excellent. What's the biggest challenge you're currently working on?
So, I mean, you know, what we're doing is a really, really hard problem, right? It's something we're trying to build across 22 countries. It has infrastructure components, it has regulation components, it has compliance components, all of these things that become really, really important as you grow larger. So when I think about 2024, I think there's two components that I spend a lot of cycles on. One is making sure we have the right people for a lot of the functions, especially leadership, because that is an amplifying effect. And especially last year, we brought in a chief product officer from PayPal, he had built out the PayPal app, you know, and a bunch of other things, chief compliance, et cetera. So if you don't have that, then it makes your job a lot harder. And I try to be very structural in how I think about it, especially as a, you know, fiduciary duty to the company. So that I think is a number one thing, which is, do you have the right people, especially in these regions that have regional knowledge? And then the second one is, how do you think through existential risks, right? There's always going to be some risk, but what are the ones that move and could potentially tip you over? And for us, that box can also be large because we operate in multiple countries, right? And so this year, there's a lot of stuff that we're looking around compliance. We're looking about on the payment side. We're looking at in terms of getting our own licenses. So those kind of amplify just the responsibility that we have towards our customer. But that's kind of the two big ones for this year. One is just making sure the people layer is there and kind of settled in. And then the second one is making sure we don't have any existential boxes that we are not taking account of that can probably change the outcome.
What's the one quality that a new hire must have?
Yeah, for me, you know, I think the thing that I've seen, and I've hired now probably about 500 people across multiple companies, so I've interviewed more than 1,000, is the one thing I have seen consistently is that drive, that hunger. Like, it's not really something you teach. You can teach ambition, you can teach work ethic, but there's a second, third level to work ethic, which is like, just, I think it's inherent in a lot of cases. It's just that you need to do it because you need to do it for yourself. It's not about something else. It's just like, you need to do this, right? And that gives you that ability to go second degree, third degree, you know, gears that a lot of people don't have. So it's not as easy to find, but the most successful people I've worked with, independent of Jeeves or not at Jeeves, are people that have that naturally, like, which is just that ability to kick into one level higher and, you know, find that internal motivation. Like, why do you want to do this? Right. And it's not obviously extrinsic money, et cetera. Those are all things that people need and want and no issue with that at all. But the things that really drive people don't tend to come from that. It comes more internally. And that, I think, is one of the key things that I try to push for, especially for kind of my like direct reports in the company.
And can you get hints of that drive by looking at someone's resume?
You know, 30%, sure, but like not enough to like make a difference, right? Like, you can see if someone has kind of that drive to like work hard and like, you know, like nothing big or, you know, of substance comes easy, right? You have to be able to work hard. You have to be able to do that. And so you can like judge that a little bit from the resume, but like it's weirdly not something correlated with, you know, like even like socioeconomic status or like what school you went to. It's just, I don't know what it is, but I can tell fairly quickly when I talk to someone a few times, like how they think about something, how they think about like an outcome and what was the driving force for how they were thinking about it. Again, it's not perfect. And like we have, just like any company, our shares of successful hires and our shares that are not. But as you talk to more people, you pick up on like, okay, like it's a little bit like pattern matching in some sense. And so I can tell that when I talk to them, but it's very hard just to look at the resume, you know, and like decide that with a high degree of accuracy.
Yeah, looking at your resume, if I just saw your resume, I'd say this person has a tremendous amount of drive. What drives you?
You know, I think our time here is limited, right? Like, you know, as you get older, and again, I'm not hopefully that old, but I feel like I am because I go every day and now I got to work out even more than I used to. But it's just your time isn't that much. You think you have long time to do a lot of stuff and you don't. And so for me, the biggest thing is you've been given opportunities that a lot of people don't have, and a lot of people do a lot of things to get those opportunities. So what are you doing with that opportunity? And so that's how I try to adjust my time and like, what am I working on? Doesn't mean it's always correct. And the other thing with motivation is everybody's got different things that motivate you, but you have to be clear about what is it that motivates you. For me, it's that time. It's like, I really do see it as almost like a ticking clock. And, you know, maybe after Jeeves, I don't want to work this hard. Maybe after Jeeves, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Like, I'm going to go chill on a beach somewhere. I don't know. Probably not. But this right now, we are kind of in the fire. We get to build something, and getting to build something is also an opportunity. And a lot of people don't get that, and you do. And so what are you kind of doing with that? So for me, that's how I kind of think about it, which is I've been lucky and I've worked hard, but, you know, I've still had a lot of opportunities a lot of people don't have. And what am I doing to give back in some sense, and not give back in like a nonprofit type of sense, but just what are you doing with these opportunities that you've been given? And so I look at it in that perspective of opportunity versus time.
Excellent. Last two questions. One, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound impact on you?
Yeah, you know, for me, it would probably be my parents. I grew up in four different continents. So, you know, they traveled a lot and they did this for, you know, better opportunities. And it just was like almost like a different time where you just did stuff and, you know, you didn't kind of think about it and like proposition it and like beat it to death. And it's just like you do it. And so a lot of how I look at things, I try to just build in a little bit of like that, you know, ability. Like my mom was a doctor, but she also, you know, started a business, sold it, like you just did it. Like you didn't overthink it, right? And so a lot of what I respect is people that are doers more than just the overthinking. Like you can think things to death and you can figure out 10 reasons why it works, 30 reasons why it doesn't. But doing something has value. Creating just because you actually did it, that I have a lot of respect for. So I see that a lot in my parents, and you know, that's something I try to kind of emulate as well.
Last question. Can you tell us about a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
Yeah, you know, like it's kind of on similar themes, but I try to kind of do a version of, you know, supporting kids that are in different countries that don't have the same opportunity. And, you know, something that, again, my parents, my dad had a scholarship to go to medical school and, you know, had a lot of impact on a lot of people's lives. And that's something that someone gave to him. So I try to look at it in that perspective of like, how can I give some of that back? So again, probably not at the level that I can do and should do, but it's something that I try to do, which is just, you know, pay that part forward. Because for me, maybe $100, $200 isn't that much, but it can make a big difference to the life of someone that you might not even know about. And, you know, you just kind of pay that forward in some sense.
Fantastic. Well, Dilip, I want to thank you again for taking the time. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.